Hi, everyone. I'm Debbie Statler, Editor-in-Chief of Provider Magazine, the flagship publication of the American Healthcare Association and the National Center for Assisted Living. I'd like to welcome you to this episode of Perspectives in Long-Term Care, a monthly podcast produced by ACA and NCAL. Each month, we'll talk with long-term care and assisted living professionals about the opportunities and challenges impacting the long-term and post-acute care profession. Today, my guest is Glenn Van Ekeren. Welcome, Glenn.
It's great to be with you.
Glenn is the president of Vetter Senior Living in Omaha, Nebraska. He is also the author of several books, including the popular 12 Simple Secrets of Happiness series and the book Love is a Verb. Along with being a keynote speaker, Glenn also writes an inspirational blog and publishes a leadership podcast entitled Little Leadership Lessons from an Old Guy. Welcome.
That's me.
Well, Glenn, let us start at the beginning. Tell us how you began your career in long-term care. What was the journey to get you where you are today?
Oh, my goodness. I could not believe that I began my career 50 years ago working as a counselor with juvenile delinquents. Unfortunately, I had been a juvenile delinquent, so I must say I was pretty good at that job. I also worked in adult corrections and a short stint as a salesperson, but I would have to say my life-transforming career move was in 1979. I became the director of personnel for an organization that serves adults with disabilities. And this was also my introduction to the long-term care world. Through a series of events and a lot of opportunities, I began doing some public speaking. And so we formed an organization called People Building Institute inside of our organization, and I began speaking and consulting, and that's where Vetter Health comes into play. In 1989, I was invited to speak at Vetter Health Services Conference for their administrators. And I continued after that doing several programs for Vetter every year. And in about 1997, Jack Vetter approached me and asked if I would ever have an interest in joining the company. So after 20 years at Village Northwest Unlimited, serving adults with disabilities, I left and joined Vetter Health Services and celebrated my 24-year anniversary a couple months ago. So it has been an absolutely wonderful journey.
Well, it certainly sounds like an interesting journey, but you can definitely see that you have a heart for people, it sounds like, in all types and forms of service there.
Well, thank you.
Well, tell us about Vetter Senior Living. What facilities are there? How large is it? What other services are offered?
Okay, I'd love to. Well, just as a brief background, Jack and Eldora Vetter started Vetter Senior Living by purchasing one facility in Fairbury, Nebraska in 1975. So we're nearing 50 years. And today we have 25 skilled facilities serving 2,000 elders. We have 7 assisted living and we serve about 300. And then we have 9 independent living serving about 350 people. We also have our own pharmacy, home health care, and we are taking our rehab services in-house. So that's our structure. Well, Debbie, probably more importantly is a little bit of philosophy here in that we really pride ourselves in being a very mission-focused, vision-inspired, values-driven organization. Our mission, which is quite simple, in fact, Jack, after having bought about 3 or 4 facilities, thought, what do I really want us to focus on? And his experience in working with elders in nursing homes, he really felt like oftentimes dignity was a missing factor. And so dignity in life became the mission. The way we interpret that is that it challenges us every minute of every day to treat everyone as the most important person in our life. That's the foundation for everything we do with residents, team members, families that we serve. And it's a driving force. And then our vision statements, they describe who we want to be when we grow up, always aspiring to meet lofty expectations, I would say. And then values, we love our values. Our values are serving, integrity, teamwork, and excellence. More importantly is how we define those, but they describe the attitudes and actions and behaviors that we expect of every team member. In fact, we all sign a team member pledge committing ourselves to live those values, which is, it's really a fun part of our culture. In fact, it is our culture. And about the last 12 years, Debbie, our daily inspiration is this: Better Senior Living is passionate about becoming a world-class organization who is transforming the view of senior care by doing what we do, no one else does it. And much of this started back in the early day when AHCA initiated the quality initiatives. And Dr. Gifford and I have talked about this many times. We wanted to exceed those initiatives. So we established 11 what we consider aspirational world-class standards. And they're the foundation and driving force for us to continually improve what we do every day. So we are passionate about that and excited about it. Our whole approach is very simple. Our formula is that culture times our strategies times execution will get us to world-class results. And we just want to do that by living our mission and our vision and values to the, I tell our team, let's live them to the nth degree. And we will definitely be on our journey to becoming world-class. So that's a little bit about Better Senior Living. And by the way, as a side note, BSL became a nonprofit organization about 7 years ago. This is a little hard for people to believe, but Jack and Eldora, in doing their estate planning, decided to literally give the company away. And so we formed a nonprofit and a new board, et cetera, et cetera. And the way in which we will now move into the future will be to make sure that we carry on the legacy and the reputation that Jack and Eldora created. It's really a huge inspiration for us here to make sure that we never lose what we've been building for 48 years.
Well, it sounds like an amazing organization filled with very special people. Well, our topic for this podcast today is leadership. And that was one of the main reasons we invited you to get your unique perspective and your experience on this idea of leadership. So let's start with the basics. What is a leader, in your opinion? What's the main goal of a leader? And then a little more specifically, what's the role of a leader in a long-term care organization?
Wow, that's big.
We start with the hard questions.
I know. So you have to know, this is my favorite topic on earth. Over the last few years, I've written 3 books. They're all the same title, Little Leadership Lessons, Not From an Old Guy, just like the podcast. And the reason they were written is to reinforce with all of our leadership what we believe is necessary for us to be successful in building a great organization. So pardon me, Debbie, if I ramble. Don't let me ramble. Cut me off, okay? Because once I get going here, who knows where this is going to go. But I would say the number one responsibility of a leader is to set the example of what they want the culture and the organization to be. We can't expect people in the organization to become anything that we're not willing to be. And so I've encouraged our leaders to understand that your team expects you to provide a healthy, upbeat, positive example of what you want the environment to be. You are the heartbeat of that culture. People want to work for leaders who are fired up and want to fire up others, not put out the fire. And so our focus becomes, how do we create that kind of a culture for people to be? If it's okay with you, I thought to myself, how do I best share my heart on what a leader is? And I've asked our executive leadership here to create their own leadership credos. In other words, what do you really believe in? What's going to drive your life and your heart as a leader? And so for me, it's become really simple. I have a few principles that drive what I do. And it begins with defining and pursuing a purpose that is mission-driven, vision-focused, and values-led. Many years ago, I decided that my mission in life would be to positively impact the lives of others. And that's been somewhat of the driving force, and that's what I mean by starting with that principle. Secondly, for me, as a leader, is I want to create an environment where people feel good about themselves, they feel good about their job, the people they work with, and they go home at night feeling good about the organization. I firmly believe that if leaders are committed to that, it's probably one of the best retention tools we have, is to create that kind of a culture where people want to come to work. Third, I believe that I have the privilege, I have the honor and the responsibility to enable people to excel and to be successful at work and in their lives, and do that by enhancing their own competence, helping them to grow, and their personal responsibility. So there's a personal commitment to those that we serve, for our team members here, to help them to become everything that they can be. I get inspired every day to grab the door handle and just ask the question, who today can I set up for success? And that's one of the credo principles that I hang my hat on. And then I think it's important. I've also often said that information tends to be power. And so we work very hard to keep people informed and involved. We build a very participative environment so that people feel as if their contributions, that their creative ideas, that their energies, that they really matter, and that they're part of the solution to us achieving our world-class pursuit. So that whole communication piece is a big one. And then to assume a servant role in everything that we do, and then consistent with our mission, is Glenn needs to make sure that he's treating everyone as the most important person in his life. And I do firmly believe that begins with the top. And as president of the company, I take that responsibility very seriously. I can never expect team members to treat people that way if I'm not willing to do that as well, and to be willing to do the things maybe that no one else wants to do. A little thought just ran by my head, a fun little story. This was maybe 40 years ago when I was working at Village Northwest. We were setting up chairs for an all-team meeting, and the maintenance guy had just started with us. And he stopped me while we were setting up chairs, and he said, you know what? And he told me where he had worked before. He said, I worked there for over 20 years, and I never had anyone in leadership help me set up chairs before. And I said, you got to be kidding me. He said, oh, no, they never help. And I thought to myself at that time, Glenn, never lose sight of the fact that people know when you're willing to serve. And so today, I'm trying to be very sensitive to that, especially the older I get. And then I think as a leader, we need to hold ourselves personally accountable for the outcomes of our efforts. We have a phrase around here we call compassionate accountability. Both go together. I want to be compassionate, but hold people accountable. And I need to do the same thing with myself. So we've outlawed excuses in this company. We're trying to eradicate sacred cows and get rid of blisters that cause us not to perform the way we want to perform, but to take personal responsibility there. And then my eighth leadership principle is that I want to continually search for opportunities to transform the status quo and ask the question, how can we create new pockets of excellence inside the organization? If the leader isn't willing to cast that kind of a vision, then they can't expect others to get excited about it as well. So I think it goes very well with our world-class pursuit, but not just world-class. I think just asking ourselves, how do we not settle for the status quo? How do we not settle for complacency? But to always ask, how do we get better at what we do? So ultimately, I think leadership is about growing people personally and professionally. And we have a wonderful privilege as leaders to help people upgrade their lives. So that's the long and short of what I see as leadership.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more about the people focus of leadership and really doing that in a positive and inspirational way. I think that's really one of the big keys of leadership. And we all know that leaders are not necessarily all at the same level. There may be leaders that need a little more development. And then you may come across leaders in your journey that are just exceptional and inspirational and life-changing. So how do you tell those leaders that may need a little more growth and development from those that are just exceptional and you should be supporting and promoting and moving even further along the line?
Yeah. Hey, that's a wonderful question, because too often leaders avoid the opportunity to help people grow. It is uncomfortable. If we have people who are not where we want them to be, it's easier just to avoid the situation and hope that everything gets better. But for any of us who have been around for any length of time, we know that avoiding a problem never makes it go away. It probably just exacerbates the situation. Another side of this, and then I'll get to how to approach this, but it's incredibly important that when those situations occur, anywhere from, let's just say, somebody not meeting expectations to somebody who's blatantly not doing what they should do, we always need to keep in mind that people are watching. And so if Glenn is not willing to address the situation, then those around me, they see it, and they're either saying he's too dumb to notice or he doesn't care. And so mediocrity is okay. It's okay not to be the best, right? So with our leadership, starting with our executive leadership, we need to set the example for others in always nurturing, nourishing, mentoring, correcting, and setting expectations for people, and then giving them whatever we can to help them get there. And that's just going to take a lot of energy. I think first thing a leader has to understand is that, number one, this was really hard, by the way, Debbie, for me to accept, because I've worked with people for 50 years, but people don't change much. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just people are who they are. My character is what it is. And all you can really do it as a leader is to be there and to give them the resources, give them the encouragement that they need to be able to improve. Now, regardless, I want to tell our leadership, you should always have an unwavering belief in the people around you, sincerely care about them. My leadership is based on this philosophy. I need to believe in people more than they believe in themselves. So regardless of whether they're mediocre or they're excellent, I will believe in them more than they believe in themselves until such time as it's determined that they no longer want to grow. But until then, I will always see the best in them and expect the best out of them. Ironically, yesterday, we finished a book club with my first leadership book, and the whole topic was believing in people. And at the end, I had a little exercise of them pairing up. And I said, here's what I want you to say to each other. If you could see me the way Glenn sees me in the future, you would be asking for my autograph. And that's what I think we need to do as leadership. We have to like people, know people, believe in people, see the best in people, but more than anything, understand that they have potential that we can help them achieve.
There's no end to growing and developing and improving personally or professionally. I love that focus on seeing the best in folks. And speaking of seeing, how do we find these leaders? How do we locate those with the qualities of leadership? And particularly, how do we find those qualities in young people who should be mentored and developed along the ladder of leadership?
I think maybe my story is the best way to answer it. I was 28 years old, wet behind the ears. I had very little skill, and I was hired to be the director of personnel for this organization. One day I was with the executive director shortly after I had started, and I was lamenting a bit about the fact that I wish I had more confidence, and I wish I had the skills that so-and-so had. I wish I had this ability or that ability. And I'll never forget it. Bob looked at me and he said, what the heck are you talking about? He said, you have a lot of potential. I believe in you, and I believe that you could be a great leader. But first, you have to believe you can be a great leader. I've told him many times, he was the balcony person in my life who gave me the jump start. Well, I think we have a lot of people, we know we do in our organization, we have a lot of people who yet don't see themselves as leaders, but we do. And I would say the last 3 of 5 administrators that we hired were people who never gave a thought to becoming an administrator, but we saw them. One was a HIMSS person who worked in medical records. One was an office manager, and the other was a social services director. And we saw in them the ability to grow and develop, and literally approached them and said, have you ever thought about? And they stared at us like, no. And today, they're administrators. The chief people officer in our company, I don't know, I guess it was maybe 10, 12 years ago, I went to her and I said, have you ever thought about taking over this entire piece of our company? And she just stared at me like, you have got to be kidding me. And today she leads the bandwagon on culture and just does an absolutely incredible job. My point in all that is, rarely do we go outside the organization if we can find a person inside that we believe we can nurture and develop to become a great leader. And I'm saying this with all humility, but we do have a unique culture, this people-focused culture that we built. Not every leader likes that. And not every person who gets into administration can buy into it. And unfortunately, we need time to see them internally. How are they functioning internally? And can they buy into our mission and our vision and our values? Otherwise, they're probably not going to work out very well. So I get it, Debbie. There are not a plentiful amount of quality leaders just excited to jump into long-term care. But there are some people who are passionate about long-term care that we can develop into great leaders. That's what our approach has been. It's not always easy, and I'd be the first to tell you, we are constantly on the lookout as well for who is going to be that next best leader that we can help to grow.
That's so interesting that you mentioned that it's really more about recognizing those leadership potential qualities in folks versus having people raise their hand and say, I want to be that leader, train me, develop me. I think that's interesting that it goes back to what you mentioned about leaders really seeing the potential and the possibility in people. And this is one of those roles to recognize the next generation of leaders and to nurture them into those positions. We all know there are formal leadership training methods, administrator and training programs, leadership development courses, but there's also more informal processes. Mentoring comes to mind. How do we get the best out of both sides, the formal and the informal processes, to build this leadership mindset in folks?
Yeah. So as I said, I've been here 24 years. And every year we're asking the question, what more? What more? What more? What more can we do to develop our leaders? But probably even more importantly, what more can we do to make sure that they understand what our expectations are of creating culture, first of all? And then we'll worry about the rest. But let's create a culture where people are excited to come to work. In fact, we have a whole little motto that we follow with that, and that is, let's make where we work a place where people love to be. How do you go about teaching leaders to do that? Well, all of our department heads throughout the company, we bring in to the home office, and we have a program that we call the Vetter Way. The Vetter Way is 2.5 days long. It is not a job orientation. We spent 2.5 days building relationships, showing them how to do hospitality, and teaching them who we are, what we believe in, and why we do what we do. That becomes the stage for them to leave the door and to go, this is what I need to create back at the facility. So there is an expectation that what we do at Vetter Way, and it's very soft skill, it's not hard skill teaching, it's very soft skill, but the expectation is you will take this, put it in your pocket, bring it back to the facility, and make it come to life in your own world. We have a little saying here about our mission, vision, and values, and that is we want to make it walk the halls, not line the walls. And that's how we get to walk the halls. You take this back, we've taught you everything you need to know about the philosophy in this company, and then you take it back. I'm telling you that because our leaders have told us it has been the most impactful situation or the impactful experience that they have as new leaders coming into the organization. Number one, because of the way they're treated. We treat them as the most important person in our lives, which they are. They become a part of our family, which part of our values are family serving family. And then they understand how they bring that back and they grow the people around them. Then down the road, we bring them back in and we do 2 to 3 solid days of conversation about our people philosophy and practices. And our chief people officer walks through the entire handbook, which, by the way, I don't like policies and procedures, so we got rid of most of those. I think we're down to 20 pages or something maximum in our handbook. And she walks through it, though, and explains the people philosophy behind everything that we do and how to deal with situations at the facility level, because things don't always go well. So how are you going to deal with those things at your level? Maybe performance issues, for instance. How are we going to do that based upon our belief about people and about leadership? Pre-COVID, we did a program called Creating a Dynamic Work Environment, and it's 3 days of leadership philosophy. That's, by the way, years ago, that's how the little leadership lessons started, is they asked for reinforcement material monthly that I could share with them to reinforce the philosophy of this company, how we work with people. So that's how came into being. Individually now with our leadership, we're a very strengths-based company. So we do the Strengths Finder, and Rhonda, our chief people officer, is our coach. And then we have people come in and we do strengths training with all of them. And so the whole point is we're not trying to make you what you aren't. We're trying to take what God put in and we're going to develop it as it is, not trying to make you into something you're never going to be. So that strengths-focused training has been wonderful confidence builder for leadership. I don't need to be like someone else. I just need to learn how do I take my strengths and use them for the benefit of the people around me. And then I think one of the things we did that really has helped in terms of leadership, but not just leadership, but all of our team members, we eliminated performance evaluations. We now have what we call BBBs, and they're called Building the Best of the Best. And it's built around the philosophy that if I have issues with Debbie during the year, we are going to resolve those. But when it comes time that we celebrate your anniversary, we're going to look to the future. And we're just going to ask Debbie, who would you like to be in the coming year? And let's build upon who you are. And so they're very conversational. And frankly, let's see, we are almost 18 years into this. It has had a dramatic impact on people's lives. And that's probably a whole other story for another time. But those are some of the ways that we're trying to build leaders. And then again, our chief people officer is the direct resource to every facility for any people issue. And so I know that everything that we do is being dealt with consistent with our mission and our vision and our values. I just love what I'm seeing in terms of the building of our leaders.
Well, I love that there's such a focus on, like you said, soft skills, confidence, really looking at the individuality of people and tailoring this idea of leadership to who people are and what their potential is to grow. I think that's just outstanding. I think confidence is such a big piece of leadership to be built.
It is. And you know what? You know this, but people who come to work in our profession are not always full of confidence. The self-esteem is not always where, of course, we would love it to be. So the number one focus on people, the reason for that is until we take care of the soft stuff, I can't expect the hard stuff to happen, at least for the long term. But when we build people, first of all, they are going to produce the results. They're what make things, policies and procedures and practices and systems, they're all great, but they don't work unless you have people who are committed to it. So that's why we invest so much energy into the soft side of things, into the people side of things first. We have very high expectations, by the way. So I'm making this sound like all soft and warm and fuzzy, But Glenn has very high expectations, and so do our leadership. But we'll help you get there. As long as you want to get there, we'll help you get there.
I love that. That's great. As long as you want to get there, we will help you get there. I don't think there's any stronger support that you could have than something like that. That's incredible.
Thank you.
Well, we can't talk about leadership without talking about the wider challenge of the workforce. So how do you specifically attract, recruit, retain leaders, rising leaders in this sort of workforce shortage environment that we're all in right now?
It's a wonderful question. I just have a funny feeling this might go sideways. But let me tell you how we do it, okay? This is for Rhonda, my chief people officer, and I believe this more today than ever before, that our greatest recruitment tool is our retention, period. You can create ads, you can go to job fairs, no, it's all, you got to do those things. But the number one recruiting tool are the people who currently work for you. And what I want to know is when they walk out of work and their friend says to them, so what's it like to work there? Do they say, man, you wouldn't believe it. You'd have got to be there to see how great it is. Or do they go, oh, it's a job. I work in a nursing home. And so the challenge we have to our facilities is this. If somebody walked through your facility prior to applying for a job and they just observed everything that's going on around them, would they go, holy moly, I need to work here? Or, yeah, it's just like everywhere else. When you create a culture like that, when you create a culture that invites people and says to those who are currently working there, you're the most important thing in our lives, and we want to keep you, you can begin your recruitment efforts. Until you create that kind of a culture, you can spend thousands of dollars in recruitment. Focus first on culture. Get it right. And our administrators know, if you don't get this right, don't come to us wanting to put all kinds of programs into play, because they're not going to work. They may work temporarily. But I'm going to tell you, in the long run, you've got to create the culture. And I know that sounds so simplistic, Debbie, but it is dang hard work. And I tell administrators, do it now. It's a whole lot easier to create a culture than it is to change one. And as things go south on you, you're going to have to work a whole lot harder in the future to get that culture back where you want it to be. And I would say to people listening, the number one way that this happens is you must have a unified leadership team. The leadership team in that facility have to all be committed to creating a place where people love to work. If not, if there's one person, you've got some poison in the facility that is going to restrict your ability to create a culture where people love to be. And I battled this for 45 years. You've got to make sure leadership are on board. Same thing at our home office. There are five of us on the executive leadership team, and I ask for their commitment every time we meet. Are we still on board? Is this who we want to be? Are we passionate about mission and vision and values? If not, we need to have other conversations. So I get the whole workforce, and when I hear providers, you know, complain about it, I get it. We're there too. But I've got to point our finger back at us and just ask the question, what are we doing to make this profession an exciting place to come to work? And that's what our focus is. I can't control all the outside forces. I can only control what we're doing to make it a great place for our 3,500 family members who are a part of Better Senior Living.
Well, I think that goes a long way in speaking to the leadership mindset and the leaders at Better. And I certainly hope that you sharing all of this wisdom will help others develop their leadership in themselves and in their organization. So thank you again for joining us today, Glenn.
Oh, thank you. It's been a joy. I appreciate it.
Well, since 2004, AKA NCAL has hosted the Future Leaders Program. This year-long program covers the latest in quality management, customer satisfaction, and leadership. Visit akancal.org and search Future Leaders. AKA NCAL is also proud to offer the Diversity Executive Leadership Program, DELP. The program aims to advance the career of long-term care professionals and develop diverse, motivated leaders. To learn more, go to acancal.org and search DELP. And ACA NCAL Ed has a course on advancing assisted living leadership. Visit educate.acancal.org and search leadership. Thanks to everyone for listening to this episode of Perspectives in Long-Term Care. Join us each month as we discuss issues that impact the long-term and post-acute care profession. And be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Take care.